everybody. This is the World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released.
Wait, are you starting? You don't want me to do an opening?
We don't do an opening for A Nearly New World. Hey, everybody.
Is this the opening?
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. Hey, everybody. Well, you're listening to the New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie made by Concord Pictures.
Sure feels like it. That's right. We're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures and even those movies that were nearly released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
I am once again here, everybody. I don't know why I keep getting invited back to this.
You're always co-host, Mark. This is your show, too.
Is it? That was a long pause.
Your idea. I was sipping. I was taking a sip. And Erica.
We don't do openings, Erica. So why do I even have to introduce myself, Ryan, if we're not doing an opening?
What I love is, like, by the time you guys figure out how this show actually works, that's when it will truly be done.
Oh, God. Let me hurry up and figure that out.
That's right. We're going to be doing a Nearly New World episode in this themed month of Sextember 3. Ménage à Trois, where we're talking about the sexploitation pictures released by New World Pictures, or nearly released by New World Pictures. Now, we didn't talk about this last week when we did They're Playing with Fire, but this month, the selections were Erica's.
Yeah.
Erica chose all of the movies we're talking about this month. And I can't wait for you to learn about next week's, Mark. But this week, we're talking about a Nearly New World movie. We talk about Streetwalkin'. Now, I put basically a pile of, DVDs and Blu-rays of movies that would work in this category, and I gave them to Erica, and she very quickly chose the movies we're talking about this month.
I followed my heart. And my heart led me astray. Wish I would have followed something else.
So what was it about Streetwalkin'? What drew you to Streetwalkin'?
I knew the name Melissa Leo.
Okay.
So
I thought it would have been the apostrophe at the end.
Oh my God. Can I re-answer that?
Street walking.
Similar to steaming.
Street walking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to remake Street Walking now as an all man version where the dudes get beat up by tough ladies. Tough, tall ladies. They get smacked around by tough, tall ladies.
I didn't. Am I the only one that didn't realize that Julie Newmar is 6'10"?
Like, oh, man. What? I didn't either.
God, she's so tall.
Good Lord, she's tall.
Yeah. She had not. This is one of the last projects that she did. It's kind of crazy. This movie is
costuming didn't need to change her out of anything for this movie.
No, so it's very true. And she's great in this. Actually, Melissa Leo, I have to say, I think Melissa Leo is really good in this movie. This is her first lead performance. She's eventually.
This is her first lead?
Her first lead role in a movie. Yeah. She's at the time, I think she's doing like All My Children. I think she's on a soap opera at that point in time. Eventually she goes on, she wins the Academy Award later on in her career, but for the Fighter, I want to say.
Sure.
Am I right about that?
I'll take your word for it.
You're gut checking it with me?
Yeah.
Yikes. Whatever you say, buddy. Sounds like a movie to me. It's all about fighty fights.
I don't know if it's true. Yes, it is. It's the right. I'm right. It's
Why did
fighter.
You second guess yourself?
I don't know. Sometimes
Come
I
on,
wonder.
Dome. You're fine.
But yeah, Julie Newmar, so good in this. And of course, a stark contrast to seeing her in the 1960s Batman series.
Definitely.
No, a lot different than that. This is a movie that was really shot in 1984. And so I have to think somewhere around the time when Corman still was making movies for New World. So, I mean, this, I think, was not particularly one of the movies that New World would not release. And then hence Corman had this lawsuit. But it was shot in 1984 in the summer. So I would think that Corman's still thinking he's making movies for New World. And one of the very first movies he releases for...
Like in a confused old man way, like, am I still making movies for New World? Yeah, you are, Roger. You are. It's okay.
He was in his 50s at that point, but I...
I'm still making New World movies, everybody.
He was in his 50s, and yes, to some people of some ages, yes, they will go, well, then, yeah, he was an old, confused man.
Oof. That's what people think of 50-year-olds?
I'm told that every day. He wasn't like confused about it. It's just that he was making movies for New World, and then New World decided they didn't want to release them. We talked about one earlier this year, Wheels of Fire. We talked about the other one, School Spirit. Those were two of the movies that, you know, New World would not release, and Roger eventually had to sue them because they weren't releasing his movies and he was making them. So he made this, or had this shot. This was shot in New York on location while he was making a bunch of movies like Barbarian Queen and a bunch of other things, I think in Argentina. He made like a bunch of movies over there. And so he only came out to New York a couple times to visit the set on this one because this was a first-time director. Joan Freeman, who was a...
Well, and it was New York in the summer. Ugh. Gross. All the trash was out on the sidewalk. It was just hot as hell. Yeah.
That's why they had the, hey, if you want to go topless, you're good. Because it's hot in the summertime in New York. And apparently in the 80s, you could just let them out. It was it was like, hey, aren't you supposed to be wearing a top? It's July. So
it's July. It's humid. It's hot. It's Come
free.
On.
Yeah.
It's free time.
Yeah. Air out your titties. Titties need air too.
Joan Freeman, she co-wrote this script with her husband.
Titties like fresh air.
They
love fresh air, actually.
that feels like a shirt that shouldn't be a shirt.
It's just see-through.
Just a see-through mesh.
Titties love fresh air.
You could barely read it because it's mesh. So you're like, what does it say?
That city's not fresh air. What are you looking at?
You're like, eyes up. I'm trying to figure out what your shirt says.
A lot of, there's a lot of words on your shirt.
Why is it in cursive?
It draws the eye.
So the youngs can't read it. This message is for olds only.
Which, by the way, is exactly how it's written on the box.
Yeah.
It's written in cursive, so youngs would not know what the name is. They wouldn't know streetwalking.
If I held this up, they'd be like, what does this say? And they'd be like, I don't know, salami.
Stralami.
Strelokskin.
Yeah. This was co-written by Joan Freeman and her husband, Robert Alden, who also... produced the movie, and she was a director who had made a bunch of documentaries basically for ABC. She had a long career doing documentaries, so she went to Corman because that's where you would still go to try to get your first directing gig. And he said, sure, but she had to make a short film first, as he would often do with certain first-time directors. And she had to shoot a short film with like an action scene and talking. And
that could have been this movie. Oh, so close.
Longest short movie
so
ever.
So close.
So they also did a lot of research for the movie by visiting shady areas in the city. Joan Freeman, who at the time was 31 years old, she frequented bars in Boston and tried to attract pimps and talk to people. And in fact, I think she even had... she had like the help from the local police who were there and had her mic'd up in case anything went wrong. And she's tried to infiltrate that world and do some research into the world of, the vice world of, I guess, Boston that she would then translate to New York.
And just incidentally, I prefer the term procurer over pimp. So okay. We could use that moving forward.
I prefer talent manager.
Same. I feel like we're on the same wavelength there.
Yeah.
Red leather, yellow leather, procure your pimp. Red leather, yellow leather, pure. Yeah, that's a tough one. That is a tough one to get warmed up with.
That's a tough one.
One of the news articles I found about the movie said that Corman stands to make a considerable amount of money as the film costs less than $2 million. I would guarantee this costs less than $2 million. That is a ton of money for Corman to spend in 1984. But now, look, we're here. We're talking about streetwalking. We got to come up with our made up, as we usually do in our regular episodes. We reveal the letterboxed synopsis. Mm-hmm. We're going to make up our own letterboxed synopsis.
Are we doing that for these? Are we at final questions? My final question is, are we doing our own letterbox? Because I didn't prepare one.
Things I loved.
Again, if it's final, the final question, then yes.
A thing I loved. Are we doing things we loved, things we hated? Because I have a thing I loved.
The final question, I guess, is do the letterbox synopsis, and then I guess the episode's over. We're going to do 10 minutes. So yes, Mark, what is your made-up letterbox synopsis for Streetwalking?
A 15-year-old boy wanders the streets of New York all night long, eventually getting some Chinese food and getting beat up in the process.
Aww.
Yeah.
I guarantee you that Chinese food is not very good.
No.
Granted, if you're ordering Chinese at 3 a.m, you're not looking for the top of the line Chinese. You're looking for something to just fill your belly.
What? But
I'm just saying, yes, someone who used to order from Hong Kong in San Francisco at 2 or 3 a.m.
Hong Kong was a late night restaurant. I'm not sure if it's still there in San Francisco.
I highly doubt it.
That delivered warm Chinese food in the middle of the night.
Hunan style, which was nice.
Yes, it was. I thought it was pretty good from what I recall. But that said, at that point in time, at that point in the evening, I'm not sure that I was a great judge. Erica, your made-up letterbox synopsis.
Two kids who are not lauk to the area.
Recalling Under the Boardwalk, sure.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Who are not laukal to the area. Find that the only marketable skill one of them has is sex. Trouble ensues.
I was going to say another synopsis to throw out there. We can get rid of my other one if you do so desire. A prostitute, upset with her procurer, requests the assistance of another procurer and inadvertently starts a turf war with all procurers in New York City.
Mm-hmm. There it is.
Mine's similar.
I want to change mine too.
We'll be here all night. A young talent manager in New York tries to take on a new client.
Right. Tracking.
To dangerous and disastrous results.
Oh, yeah. I like that. I like that.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say the pluses to me about this movie is that they do. I don't know how obviously it's a made up movie. So I don't know how real it is, but I think there's a lot of like realism to it, especially for a movie produced by Roger Corman. And he would occasionally do stuff like this, where he would allow someone to go off and make a movie and really come back with a lot of, you know, an actual like kind of realism to it. Penelope Spheeris, I'm thinking of for one. But it's not, listening to the commentary on this, it's not, he wasn't not up to his usual tricks, because he definitely came to the set and in a scene that didn't have nudity, he forced them to shoot it with Melissa Leo naked. And then he left and they reshot it without her naked, because that was not the case. Yeah. And so Roger really insisted on a lot of nudity. So there is a lot of nudity, but that the story does call for that. I mean, it is a story about a young girl who she and her brother come to New York and they've been kicked out of their house by their mom. And she ends up meeting this guy who's a young procurer and
talent manager.
And she begins to work for him. And, you know, and then we get involved in that world. And
her final questions, though, but when we do see her apartment,
yes.
It's just you walk in and you're immediately in the kitchen and there's a bedroom to the left and a bedroom to the right. Where does the brother sleep?
Mm-hmm.
Great
because
question.
Because the bedroom to the left was Nancy's bedroom and the bedroom to the right was Cookie's bedroom. Where does the brother sleep?
In a closet.
Evidently he doesn't, because he just roams the streets all night long.
Does he ever do his homework?
No.
Scamp. Not at all. No.
He's out there in the sun picking sunflowers.
That's true. From he does hang out, I guess, in the
community garden or wherever he is. That's yeah. Mm-hmm.
Remember when you used to go out at night and just throw rocks into the tiny pond at the community garden? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I was just doing that yesterday.
Yeah.
Times.
That kid, by the way, Randall Batenkoff, and I was like, where do I know this kid from? And he is in The Player.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
This movie has a lot of people that are like, oh, that guy.
Right. Julie Newmar sort of had a longer career, and so she was sort of like coming in. I was like, probably at that point, you're still like, oh, hey, Julie Newmar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. Antonia Fargas, who we've already talked about, she was in Foxy Brown. We were in our Jack Hill series, who's also great in this. Leon Robinson, yeah. I think this is one of his earliest movies, the guy who plays Jason, the talent manager to be, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And he was eventually, I think, known more for like the Five Heartbeats and a bunch of other things. But this seems like a very young version for him. Melissa Leo, obviously, this is one of her first movies. Dale Midkiff, I want to say. Dale Midkiff, I want to mention him because he did not have as huge a career after this, but this is one of his big highlights. But he was in the film Pet Sematary. And then he played Elvis Presley in a miniseries called Elvis and Me, produced by New World Television.
Oh,
my gosh.
Here we go.
Well, since my baby left me, I found a new place to roam. It's down at the end of New World Street at Television. Some New World TV, baby. Shit. Well, I hope they don't have Elvis auditions anytime soon. I'll be getting that part.
Oh, my God.
I think everybody knows that.
Take that.
You've also got, Greg German in this? Yeah. He's always kind of like the creepy guy or the, you know.
The whole time I was watching that, I was like, where do I know this guy from?
Allie McBeal.
Allie McBeal.
Yep.
Yeah. And Annie Golden that was in Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
Did I overdome that one?
Yeah, I overdomed.
You bro-domed him. You got him.
Oh, you got me. You got me. Got me on that one. She was also that's right. She was a recurring character in Miami Vice. I was wondering, like, where do I really remember her from? She was in Miami Vice. She plays the real drugged out girl that is one of Antonio Fargas's crew. Mm. I will say it's kind of a gritty story. You guys both hated it.
I did, but here's the thing, Ryan. I will say, I think we kind of touched it at the beginning. Everybody is doing an excellent job in this movie. I mean, every actor in every scene, I'm like, they're like, I have no complaints about any of the characters or any of the performances.
Everyone's on the seats.
Oh, I know. How can you complain about that?
You had some great cars in this, Mark. I thought for sure you would be happy.
Phenomenal. Oh, yes. And my favorite scene involves one of the cars. But
we're not doing favorite scenes, but just mentioned.
Everybody's doing a hell of a job in this movie, but it's sort of like, you know, everyone did a really good job in Shutter Island. Didn't make it a good movie.
Wow.
Well, a little preview for when we do Corman Graduate's Martin Scorsese.
That's hilarious.
When we get to the Shutter Island episode.
Shutter Island? Oh, man. That's hilarious. That just unlocked some memories.
I'm with Mark on this one. I hate to say it. I also saw that one in the theater and I was like, ho-hum.
I think we all saw it together. At the Long Beach Town Center.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I was there? That's how I saw it with you guys?
You do not recall seeing movies. It's so funny.
Honestly, there's so many movies I look at the box of and I'm like, you're like, we saw this and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, ha! You say so.
Did not stick with me.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Mark and I weren't big fans, and apparently you weren't either, whether you like, whether you know it or not.
I just remembered I'd seen it, so. Yeah.
Well, that's good enough. The thing about this movie, though, and the reason why I put it in the stack, which Erica then did pick, was that for me, especially considering that this is almost a New World movie, I was then looking up, various, I was trying to look stuff up and trying to get a little background on the movie. And I was trying to look it up with Streetwalking and Angel, because you're shooting this in June or in the summer of 1984. At that point in time, the top of 1984, New World has released Angel. And then they were already shooting Avenging Angel, which comes out in 1985, before this movie comes out in September of 1985. So, like, to me, this one was like, I mean, this is Roger just going, well, that Angel was a hit. I mean, now I realize Joan Freeman sort of came to him with this kind of idea of making this kind of movie, but it's, I was surprised in looking things up that there weren't more people. There were a few reviewers at the time that did mention New World and Angel, but it really wasn't something that came up a ton. And I'm like, to me, this was clearly Roger going, well, why not? I mean, that Angel was a hit, so let's do this.
I agree with you, and I'm sure he was like, that made money, so let's do it again. I mean, just like he has with so many other genres that kind of pick up steam. But while I would say Angel is a prime candidate, including the sequels, for Sextember, this one felt more like Sadtember.
Thank you for saying Sextember so formally. It should be very...
I like this.
Sextember.
Sexual
temper.
Gotta put that pause in there. But yeah, this felt like Sadtember.
It's weird that we didn't put in this Sextember. We did not do a Angel movie or a Nurses movie.
Well, I just want to say, to my defense, the box looks fun. It's in like a fun cursive font. It's street walking. Forget the G. That implies that it'll be fun. Melissa Leo, you're thinking, okay. You look on the back, there's some hot ladies. It doesn't give you an indication of what's to come. A teen runaway escapes her abusive stepfather and heads for the Big Apple with her younger brother. Great. Sounds good. She meets charming but sadistic. Oh, someone should have read the back a little bit.
You stopped too early.
Oh, no. I should have read a little... Oh, no. He introduces her to the harsh, brutal life. Oh, no. Okay, this one's on me. I'm going to be honest. I didn't read the whole back of the box here, so I probably...
I did not hate this movie.
Oh, boy.
The thing that I will say that you and I were talking as we were watching it, because I watched it a couple times for this, and the second time through, you were kind of like, who's putting this one on and just being like, feel like watching Streetwalking tonight, which yeah. I will totally agree with. Like, I think this is actually, especially like, Roger is not known for this kind of like hard hitting drama. And I actually think this is a really well-made movie. And I think it's filled with good performances. As you're saying, I think this is actually a pretty good movie, but yes, it's not one that I'm going to be like, can't wait to revisit that one, because it's a bummer, mm-hmm. It's sad.
Yeah.
Even if it has the kind of ending, it doesn't, it's not like Angel, which can have bummer moments, but is ultimately kind of fun and makes it kind of actiony and, which we will get to, everyone.
Sure.
Funny enough, we get to Streetwalking before we get to Angel on this podcast. Well, so,
the thing that makes it a bummer is that it's not like a, ooh, revenge, the bad guy got it, woo, kind of ending. Mm-hmm. It's like, oof, they barely made it out of that, didn't they? Jeez.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very like skin of their teeth.
They get out of a bad situation, but they're not in a better situation at the end of the movie.
And then they get out of this situation, and what are they walking back to? That apartment where the brother doesn't have a room?
Well, he's got one now.
Oh. Oh, Nancy.
Yeah, but he's also going to start paying the rent too. Yeah, it's one of those endings. It's like, well, they got through one very bad hurdle, but it's not like their lives are any better. So it's
well, hold on. Okay. Okay. Let me think about this.
Okay.
If Tim plays his cards right, Trisha could move in, and you know he's kind of got a thing for her.
He does.
There could be upside for that empty room.
She has no interest in him, which is good considering he's a child.
Yeah.
So that's a good move on her part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but if she could sign a 3-year lease, and by the later maturity part of the lease, he will mature into better sleeping arrangements.
It's more like not a lease, it's more of an agreement. We're not going to try and keep this on the down low from the old landlord, but let's just have a roomie to roomie agreement.
Yeah, I think that apartment's been sublet by many people. I think they've been holding on to the original lease amount.
A legit apartment in New York. They really wanted to stick with real locations, and they said it was very difficult to shoot in because it was very small.
Yeah.
So
no, it felt like it. I think that was something that was accomplished, was like, this place is tiny and it sucks.
And I also love that like the many challenges that they show that Melissa Leo is dealing with as Cookie, that she's like also has a cat. Like that is,
I know.
That's like the, you do not need that cat.
No,
you have
maybe
so you do much to going keep on the rodent population. Maybe down. That's what
maybe.
Thought.
Oh yeah,
just, you know
that's what she's feeding. Just a little bit of tuna, not too much. Just
not
a little
too much.
Bit.
Don't want
to just wet the palate.
That's Tim's tuna. That's Tim's tuna, but Mittens gets a taste. You know.
Fair.
How many cats are named Mittens? Like there's got to be thousands, right? Is it not the most popular name for a cat of all time?
I mean, her name's Cookie, so I'm just imagining.
Her name is not Cookie. That's just like his name is not Duke. These are nicknames they've gave themselves. Actually, I would say Cookie probably got that as a nickname.
But what's her real name, though?
I don't know. We don't know. That's what she's called. But
her brother calls her Cookie, which makes you believe that that's been around since they were kids.
Probably a family nickname. Whereas the guy who's Duke, that's not his name. He gave himself that name. He gave himself a nickname. He was like, yeah, call me Duke. And they're like, okay, Bob, or whatever.
Okay, Raymond. You're
don't
not
call
more
me
of
that.
A baddie.
Yeah, no. My name is Duke.
No one calls me Raymond.
Call me Duke now. God.
So Cookie's real name is like, I don't know, Colette or something. Or
yeah, probably
cocaine.
What did Colleen.
It was
Colleen.
It was cocaine.
Have you met my daughter Cocaine? And my son
Cookie.
Tim. Timothy and Cocaine. Yeah,
cocaine.
My
Timothy.
Two kids.
She turns in cocaine. No. Cookie.
What did it surprise you if Tim had a drunk mom. Another marriage?
Yeah, my mom just thought I was trying to hit on her husband, so she kicked us out of the house. Oh, I'm so sorry. What's your name? My name's Cocaine. Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I mean, this is all tracking. And
at her age, though, wouldn't you try to mix that up a little bit? And like, it's cocaine. It's cocaine.
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 I go by Kane. And she goes the other direction. She's like, call me Cookie. And everyone's like,
yeah.
Oh, all right.
Weird.
I mean,
okay.
Weird.
To me, it felt like such a...
Has a C, I suppose.
It felt like such a name that maybe like somebody from the South would have.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, oh, Colette. We call her Cookie. But I don't know where they were coming from.
Yeah, I don't know where they're coming from
so
either.
It just felt like they were coming from like New Jersey or something.
They'd have to be coming from somewhere... Not too far, because if they're coming from like the South or something, like they wouldn't go to New York, be like, okay, I guess we'll go to New York. In fact, in general, I'm not sure why they're like, oh, we're getting kicked out of the house. We don't have anywhere to go. I guess New York City. Like, I really don't understand.
Maybe
that
they
as a
were
choice.
Just in New Jersey though. And it was like, well,
that's
I guess
what
we go
I
to the city.
Because they come into Port Authority. And, you know, I don't know anything about that. So I'll try to speak like an expert. You know, I think they're just...
Oh, please tell us more about New York.
Well, you know, they have buildings there. Buildings, streets,
oh,
cabs.
Do they? Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I'm learning a lot.
Mm-hmm, rumor has it they have decent pizza.
Depends on what kinds you prefer.
That's right.
Can I... Just to go back to my Letterboxd synopsis... Another synopsis is if you land in a new city and you're effectively stranded at a bus
stop. So by boat, you're saying? Because you said land.
I feel like
when you arrive at a new city on a bus and you're at the bus station, and someone starts talking to you and they say, I just want to be your friend. They don't.
Yeah.
They don't want to be your friend.
No.
They don't at all. So.
And but honestly, like.
Is that your letterboxed or?
I love the way Melissa Leo
scratch that one.
Was that your new letterboxed?
Yeah, that's my new letterboxed.
I love the way
we can keep that in there. It's funny.
I love the way Melissa Leo like plays that scene though, because she's like kind of hesitant, but she's just so desperate for someone to be nice to her that she's like, I guess you're okay. Like, no, I mean, if you know anything about the world, you would be like, this is still very sus. As the kids would say. And so there's no reason to trust this guy, but she's just that desperate for just anyone to be nice. Even the brother's like, who's this dude? And she's like, no, he's okay. And I'm like, they cut to years later, but I'm like, I feel like the brother would have had more to be like, no, this dude to dude. Yeah. I know this guy's a creep. Yeah. Like I can tell you,
right.
Like, you know, right. I'm a young kid and I know this guy's bad news, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, Tim just wanted something to eat. So at the time, he was distracted by that. Yeah.
That's
so.
How young he is.
Stealing sandwiches.
Yeah.
And... The interesting also part about this movie is that, and I thought of this because of the way Eric and I were talking about the movie, but I feel like this is the after hours of high school hooker movies. Because at one point when we were watching the movie, Erica was like, well, this is one crazy night. And I was like, it is. It really becomes outside of once you're introduced to their story and you see them at the bus stop and then you get to into their story, like how they're living in New York. Then at a certain point, and it's really once Cookie really tries to switch managers, which, you know, I feel like many actors or musicians or, you know, writers, directors can understand that it's a difficult thing to switch managers. Really tough.
Yeah.
Usually someone dies. So
can we drill down on that? Does it typically happen where when you switch a manager, the new manager tries to beat up your old manager?
Yeah, it's expected someone will be killed. That's
Wow. That's right. I had no idea.
That's why some of the big agencies are able to buy up so many of the smaller agencies. It just it's a rumble goes down,
and by it's a numbers game. They actually murder the whole.
Yeah, they murder them, and then they just take the few survivers and they just absorb.
Got it.
Crew.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that.
They do it like Dark Knight style, where they just break a pull cue in half and they throw it down on the ground and they go, one of you is going to live and one of you isn't.
That's a superhero.
You think I would see Dark Knight? I have no idea what you're talking
about. I've seen Dark Knight hundreds of times.
I'm sorry, Erica. I'm so sorry.
No. There was a time, because we did see, I have seen the movie a lot, but there was a time when if Erica would leave the room, I would put it on. So she would come back in and I would press play and it would just start the Dark Knight and she'd be like, come on.
It was, but it would take her a second because I felt like it was always on.
It was on TV a lot for a while. And I just, and then, so it was on TV so much that I started doing it whenever she would leave the room for an extended period of time, I would just put it on and prepare it.
And he would always have it paused on that, like about to zoom in, and
it zooms in on a bill. It's shot in Chicago, so it zooms in on a building, and the opening sequence is a bank robbery. So it's a bank robbery, Mark. You can't be bored by that. Mm-hmm.
And the point of this story is
we haven't heard that one in forever.
That's great.
Oh my God, terrific! All right, I'll shut up. I've been given that.
But one of the things about this movie is it spends an exorbitant amount of time in a nightclub that does not look very fun. The kind of nightclub that I would have left pretty quickly after walking in, being like, this isn't for me. But I have to say,
it's an interesting line of demarcation as an adult, is when you see that kind of club is like, that could be a good night. And you see that club is like, I wouldn't be caught dead.
Right.
I'm not sure when that line happens. I don't know.
I don't know if it's caught dead. It just doesn't look like a lot of fun. Where you just be like, okay, I mean, it's fine, but let's go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I'm not going there. Yeah.
I think it's when it starts to feel unsafe and you start, you get to the age where you're like, would I pee here?
Yeah.
I don't think right. so. Right. I'll hold right. it in. And that's when you're like, right. I'm old. And also, this place is sketchy.
Yeah. If I have to take a dump.
No one's taking a dump. Are you serious right now?
It does happen.
You're not taking a dump anywhere in public, let alone this club.
I do remember going. Emergency. I do remember going to clubs when I was younger, and I would be going. I'd be using the urinal, and someone would walk right past me and hit the toilet. And
oh yeah,
I mean, drop the toilet seat down.
Yep, and you could hear it. Yep,
man, you.
You're like, wow. Here,
how
you here? That happens a lot here in Los Angeles when I go out to like see live shows. The bathrooms in most of the places to see live shows in LA are right. wretched. They are wretched. They are mm-hmm. honestly maybe two steps above the toilet and train spotting. And
you know, who's pooping at live entertainment?
I don't know.
It happens all the time.
It happens a lot. And it is like, really? You couldn't do it. There was nowhere else.
You couldn't make it?
There was nowhere else.
How bad is your planning that you couldn't have been like, you know what, before I leave, maybe I'll just try to clear the pipes just to make sure.
Or just speaks to the emergency they found whilst in the show. They were like, oh my God.
When I look at those people, some of those people, I just think they're just like, they're just pooper people. They're just like, I gotta poop. Yeah. I'm gonna go poop now.
They're like, just like watching the show and they're like, well, since my baby
I always get to the restroom. I always get the runs when I see an Elvis impersonator.
I need to poop right now.
I always have to take a shit.
And I also need to poop in the smelliest poop that is just destroying the air quality in the bathroom for all those who are in there to pee and barf.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
That's the other person who's there at the show. They're like, well, since my baby. And it's like, wow, you're already going to puke? But this is the opening song.
If you actually make it into the bathroom and puke in a toilet, like, I say congrats, because most of the time that is not the case.
Yeah, it's usually on the way to
it's sure. usually like route to the bathroom,
to the trash, and it hit the trash can right outside of it,
or it hits the floor, like, you know, that is all happened. It's all been gross. This is all pertinent to the movie because as I said, once we get to the club and she's trying to switch talent managers, then it becomes a One Crazy Night movie. Because then the rest of the movie takes place like over the course of this night, because Duke is like, he reminded me of like Jason or Freddy. It was like, he was a guy that you could not take down.
No,
several guys tried to stop this dude and that he could not be stopped.
I mean, the amount of capital crimes he commits just to get his talent to come back to him is significant.
It's impressive. Yeah.
He doesn't take rejection well.
No, he does not. Before we move on to that, though, I wanted to point out quickly about the nightclub. I was pleased to see that Private Walter Steele got a job as a bouncer. And I was like, wow, I mean, when he was in the underground silo and the zombies were coming after him, I thought for sure he shot himself in the head. But, you know, some people miss when they shoot themselves, and obviously he recovered and got a job as a bouncer in New York City. So like, good for him. Like, he made it out and, you know, found gainful employment. I was kind of proud in that moment.
So you're talking about Gary Howard Clark, who was in Day of the Dead.
Did I see
Thank
that
you for
one?
Picking me up on that.
Yeah. Who's the bouncer in this?
I mean, I just got to say, this movie inspired me and reminded me about the miracle of medicine, that he could recover and find a good job and have full motion and speech and be able to move on from what was really a tragic time in, I guess, the world's history. Not sure how they solved the zombie problem by this movie, but, you know.
Somehow they did. Somehow it seemed, by the end of Day of the Dead, it does not appear like they've got it figured out.
But just a scant three or four years later, everything was fine.
He doesn't fight Duke, right? He doesn't fight Duke. It's really Jason and his crew that attempt to fight him and have a gun on him. And it goes to show, like, if you are going to take your eye off of the guy you have your gun on, not a great idea.
No.
And watching the second time in that sequence where Duke escapes from Jason's henchman, I was like, that poor guy who is driving. He's just driving.
Yeah.
He's like, you got this in the back, right? You got a gun on him. We should be good. Who gets shot? The driver. He's like, dude, I'm just driving.
Mm-hmm. Bummer. No, it's, I mean, if you are told you have the gun and you got to watch someone, I'm trying to liken it to, this is probably not going to go anywhere, but it's the equivalent of me having, it's the equivalent of me having a deer in my, the sights of my rifle and then choosing to just be like,
yeah,
I'm going to look around. Away. I'm going to look. Hey, is that a squirrel over there?
What's the score last night? Let me check my phone real quick. Yeah.
Right. Like you kind of, you should keep your attention. Keep focused on, you have one job in that moment. Keep focused on that. It's not going to be forever.
But bold to put him in the car, like, just, you know, with not hands free, feet free. Sure. Like he was not, you know.
Yeah.
And then just like with one guy, like it was, but also bold that Duke was like, just turn your head, man. And I got this, you know, I mean, like that's
also, once you got him in the car and you're a few blocks away, kind of you're driving. Most of this movie takes place in somewhat deserted, beat up parts of New York. Just shoot him.
Yeah.
You can dump his body wherever you're going to go. Just shoot him now.
And that's why I felt, again, bad for the driver, because he probably was like, please don't shoot him in my car, because then I have to clean all this.
Yeah. Right. Don't do it. I'm responsible for cleaning this. And
please, like, I have to pick up my parents tomorrow. We're going to go have lunch.
Mm-hmm. It was going to turn into a real Pulp Fiction moment.
Yeah.
They have to call the wolf.
Exactly. I have to call somebody from a fancy dinner party to help clean this up. I'm going to end up having to wash myself with a bar of soap in some stranger's backyard with a hose. I don't want that. Mm-hmm. The guy whose house it is like,
scene, by the way,
is a lousy actor.
Right. Right. But, and he's all worried about if his wife comes home and sees this, he's going to be in real trouble. Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah. I get it.
You're saying that's your favorite scene of Pulp Fiction?
No, I'm saying if that scene was in this movie, it would have been my favorite scene.
Okay. I thought for a second you were saying, oh, I love that part of Pulp Fiction. I'm like, that's a surprise. That's a surprise.
I do love the scene when they shoot him, because they're just talking with him and accidentally shoot him, and it's so abrupt.
That part, in
Pulp Fiction, where you're like, oh, shit.
Where he's like leaning back just to get his opinion and accidentally shoots him in the head and kills him. Yeah, yeah. I mean, amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
But amazing. Then you talk about things you could cut. You're talking about this movie. You could cut 20 minutes out.
Yeah, but you don't. But the wolf. Who played the wolf?
Harvey Keitel.
Harvey Keitel does such a good job in that scene. I recognize you could have had other players in that, but Harvey Keitel is crushing that scene.
Is this still the Letterboxd? Or what are we talking about? We're still talking about streetwalking?
You're right. We have veered off the path. You're correct. You're correct.
Are we? Are we at things we love yet? Or
Joan Freeman goes on to direct Satisfaction. That's the next movie that she directs.
Does that also end with an N apostrophe?
No. Satisfaction.
Satisfaction. Street walking.
No, Satisfaction is...
Steamin.
Is a movie about musicians. with Justine Bateman.
God, I just realized for steamin, I should call it steam men.
Oh, now you're onto something.
Mm. Mm-hmm. But then you don't have the apostrophe.
I'll still have it.
It's just en instead of in.
Yeah, it's like steam men.
Steam men apostrophe. I get it.
And then like one of these like a wink.
And then a picture of your face winking.
No, not me. Just like people will know.
Just a winking face. The wink
will be implied.
It won't be there actually, but it's there.
People will know.
You know, for the most part. Well,
Satisfaction.
Satisfaction. That's the next movie that they made after this. And that one was such a huge bomb. I don't know what happened to Joan after that, but she does not make another movie.
That one was a bomb?
Satisfaction. It was.
Have you seen that one?
Yeah. I mean, not in a long time. Not since like VHS, but yeah. It's about an all-girl band that goes on the road and...
Huh.
You guys haven't seen that one? Am I the only one?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Is that do you play that more or less than Dark Knight?
Less.
Less. Significantly less.
Okay. Okay.
Dark Knight gets a lot more play.
Mm-hmm.
I own Dark Knight for a start. I do not own Satisfaction. It's not a great movie, but it's also, it was one of those movies that bombed. So when it came on video, I was like, well, let me check it out. And then you were like, well, this isn't that bad. I mean, this is not great, but this isn't terrible, you know?
You know, as people do. It's like, oh, I heard this movie's a piece of shit. Let's rent it. So I know we're not at final questions, but
we're never going to get
When Duke goes to the nightclub, and it's the first time that we're introduced to the nightclub, he walks up to the bar and he says to the bartender that he'll have a scotch. But before the words even come out of my mouth, she's pouring him a drink. Mm-hmm. Do you think that was a scotch, or do you think that it was just shit bourbon? And if it was, do you think he drank it anyway?
Well, he does drink it anyway, I think, for sure. And yes, it's bourbon. And also, that's probably what... Here's my guess. I think the bartender was like, he says scotch all the time. He means bourbon.
Got it. I know him. If I served him bourbon, he would say, what the hell is this?
Yeah, Duke is not having a sip, spitting it out and going, what is this, a space side? give me some flavor. You know, it's like, he doesn't drink scotch. Yeah. He doesn't know.
She was just pouring him a nice tea. Because he can't handle either one. He'd be sipping it like, it burns my throat, I'm going to punch somebody.
He drinks it.
She just pours him straight iced tea.
He drinks an iced tea.
Just sweet tea. Just sweet tea.
Man. I'm
ooh.
Okay. Another final question. Do you think at the end of this movie, Cookie meets up with her client that drives the Corvette Stingray?
Oh,
and
yeah.
They decide to actually have just like a nice, normal relationship?
I don't think so, because that's a nice ending. I don't think that this story has a good ending. Mm-mm. But that I also don't think that that guy with that nice car who says he's such a nice guy, we never get back to him. But my bet is he's like anyone you've ever met who are like, yeah, I'm pretty funny. All my friends say I'm really funny. You're like, oh, you're the least funny person I'm probably going to meet on earth, right? So somebody who's like, I'm a nice guy. You know I'm a nice guy. Like, and I care about mm-hmm. you. And I'm like,
yeah,
you're probably a creep. Like, in reality.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So even if that seemed like a potential out for her, I don't think that guy was on the up and up. I think that guy was a creep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he does go on to say... I mean, don't you see how much I like you?
Yeah. When you have to say that, like, don't you get it?
When you have to say that after you've paid for services,
yes. Like,
yeah. You're in a real gray area there, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Whether he likes you or not, the transaction has been done.
Right. I'm glad that you enjoyed.
It's like asking your waiter.
Paid.
Asking your waiter at the end of the meal, like, we're friends, right?
Do you not realize how much I enjoyed this meal and
how
your service
food?
Of it?
It was delicious, and we're best friends, right? Right? I mean, you served me that delicious food. I think it's only natural that we...
When the barista hands you the coffee and it has that cool, like, leaf on it, and you're like, wow. Like, we're buddies, right? What are you doing after this? Let's go hang out later today, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you gave me a coffee with, like, a design in the top. Yeah. In the foam, like,
yeah,
we're buds, right?
Co-sign the lease. Let's go. We're roommates now.
I need a roommate.
Our
dude.
Hands touched when you handed me my drink and a special leaf on it. I got us an apartment.
We're buddies.
We're friends.
Friends forever.
Yeah. Who are you calling? Your manager? Why? It's weird. He's not friends with us. Or is he? I don't know.
If you want to
share, a three bedroom,
if you want to share the room with him, that's up to you guys. I'm cool with it, but like, I'm not sharing my room with. I don't know your manager.
I'll
so.
Get a three bedroom. Just say it. How many parking spots do we need? I don't know. Just let's talk it out.
Mittens is gonna love you.
Yeah.
Shit, Mittens. Oh. Shit! They go to Mittens. Mittens has eaten all the tuna. None for Tim. That's the kind of night they're going
to. Tim is fucked on the tuna.
Tim is starving.
I was happy, though, that Tim didn't get killed. Like, it's obviously a manipulation for the, you to
that
think.
That night.
Think,
I mean, did he make it through the weekend? Who knows?
True. It's true. Honestly... All when they all walk off and it's like Cookie and Tim and Julie Newmar, they're all, I mean, they all could be literally as they fade out, somebody could come up and be like, give me all your money, and they're fucking dead. Like, I don't know, like they are not living good lifestyles.
I mean, one could argue as they're walking off and we as the viewers are like, wow, what a wild night, they could be like Tuesday.
Yeah, true. I mean Mm-hmm. Just a yet another chapter. Just what a crazy week. Mm-hmm. That's just our lives. Do you think Julie Newmar, at the end of this movie, once she walks these brother and sister back to their home that they're going to have to vacate at the end of the month, do you think she then retires to her horse farm?
I don't think she's anywhere close to that horse farm.
No.
That's a pipe dream. 100%.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. $100,000 is a lot of money to raise. You know? And in New York.
Especially
again,
in 84.
New York. Like, that's an expensive town, even in 84. I know it's with people that live there now and the prices in 1984 are probably like, oh my God. But still, even then, at the time, expensive
city. For
sure.
Expensive city.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless the horse farm is the name of a convenience store that she hangs out in the front corner of. In which case, possibly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great name for a convenience store. Horse farm.
Or she's the new talent manager of...
She should be.
Goofy looking
she
prostitute.
Is so...
She's got a real corral of
should
talent.
Just be cut out. Oh no.
I got my horse farm.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Well.
Oh no. That's what we're going to end it on.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Oh God. Oh. Well, guys.
Did we even talk about this movie? Talk about this movie?
I think we did.
Lightly.
I think for the most part we did.
We lightly talked about it. Oh man.
I
just did a little bit of Ryan's research here, and I'd just like to say that New York in the summer, very hot. And that's it! And that's it! Hope
that
you enjoyed
our episode
of Street Walking.
Street Walking, bring a little tiny rag with you, because it's hot out.
Yeah. Or a big rag.
And pop your top. Don't be afraid to pop your top, everyone.
When it gets too hot, pop the top.
I will say, it is fun to... look at not only this one doesn't have a good one, but it does. Yeah, the actual poster, the DVD has a reverse poster. The poster of Street Walking, again, like a lot of good Roger Corman posters, not and New World posters as well. Mm. Not Melissa Leo.
No.
Who is that?
No.
Who is that?
Someone. It's somebody, but
that's
not
Larissa,
Melissa
that's
Leo.
Larissa
no.
Mio.
That is not her. We have talked about Street Walking. I do want to bring up that the great thing about this movie and many movies of the 80s is that they actually had theme songs.
Mm-hmm.
And Street Walking is no different.
Yeah.
This one has a theme song. Let's take a quick peek at the theme song. Well, hello, baby. You want some company? I got what you've been missing.
Street walking.
I mean, that's how the movie starts.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay,
this could be fun.
And it also is the end song. And I'm like, it's clearly written for the movie.
Sure. Well, I hope so.
Let's hope. Otherwise, or just a great coincidence.
Grandma's going to love this. Streetwalking. She played for piano lessons my whole life. Streetwalking. She was always at all my ballet recitals.
We just happened upon a song that's also called Streetwalking. It's also about prostitution. It's crazy. What luck. Kismet. Yeah. It is a theme song for this movie, and the fact that did they think they were going to sell like soundtracks for Streetwalking? I hope so too. I love that, and
this song and the theme to Cheers, like right up at the same like peak of TV show and movie themes that I love.
It's written and produced by Michael Ender. Michael Ender does the music also for the movie. Michael Ender and Odette Springer, and performed by Sylvia St. James. And it's a great vocal performance. It's a really good little song. Michael Ender does the rest of the music for the movie. So like he just went, okay, I'll write a real song, a theme song. And because that was what you did. And
yeah,
it's kind of funny that the song is such a fun upbeat track, and it's for this sort of a very dour and you know, sort of tragic look at what it's like to live on the streets of New York and try to make a living. And I mean, but again, not unlike the Angel movies, something they did a lot was throw in some great tracks. So I just thought that was an interesting one, because it was like of all the things for a streetwalking to have is to have such a great upbeat theme song. But that's it. That's us talking about Streetwalking. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Check out our other episodes of Sextember 3, Menage a Trois, at our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. It's where you can find all of our episodes, interviews, articles, t-shirts, buy a t-shirt. And we'll see you next time with the New World Pictures Podcast, part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.